Again, everybody, this is Tom Snyder. This hour is an encore presentation of the radio show. You won't be able to call us tonight, but we hope you'll enjoy it. My guest is Stan Freberg, known as the man who has done more than anyone else to legitimize the use of humor in advertising. Grammy Award winner Stan Freberg returns to tickle the nation's funny bone in a program called The New Stan
You're listening
Freberg
to Service
Show.
60 WYCC.
Hi, good joins evening. Us in I'm person. Debbie Reynolds.
Okay, first of all, let's give Stan a level check, Bob, okay?
A little
Stan.
Level check here, Bob, okay?
Okay,
sounding Stan Freberg here, how do I sound?
You know,
just a little trip backstage here in Radio Land, folks.
Thanks for coming in tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime I can be on this show, I'm all for it. What
so
is this, about my six times now?
Something like that. Yeah, I think he holds the record, as a matter of fact, of times back.
Is that a fact? Well.
Now, go through the drill here.
Same
it's
to
on,
you.
It's on public radio, but it's on differing times on differing stations, so they got to call the NPR station or check the paper, right?
I have no idea why National Public Radio, in their infinite wisdom, did it that way, but. And people have to find their NPR station, and there it is, a new one-hour comedy radio show. Now, tell me when you want me to tell you any more about that.
I want you to tell me about it right now. How did the project get started? How long did it take to do? And what is the program? What's the show about? And don't say it's about 59 minutes and 30 seconds.
No, well, not anymore. I'm not going to say that. Okay. You want me to tell you about the content first?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
How it got off the ground? That's kind of boring.
Okay, but, content.
Content. Okay, this is just like the radio show that I did in 1957 when I replaced Jack Benny. And that when that went off, that made me the last network comedy radio show in America, the last network radio comedian in America, because after that, there were no more shows in the long form, half hour or hour, mm-hmm. emanating from Hollywood or New York. That was it. I was the end of the line. And my idols were always Fred Allen and Jack Benny, so I thought it was a dream come true when I replaced Jack Benny on CBS Radio. Little did I know that the radio was dying at that point, and everybody was putting their money into television. So nobody has done this long-form thing, Tom, until now when I did this new one. Okay. Anyhow, I have the same band leader that I had when I did that show, the great Billy May. And about 12 musicians, 10 singers, the
wow.
Jimmy Bryant singers.
Wow.
Because I've written original music for the show. Okay. And I have a marvelous cast of actors. Harry Shearer, who...
Terrific. He's been here
Spinal
too.
Tap, yeah. Yes. And he's the voice of Homer Simpson's boss at the nuclear plant. And many, many other things. And David Ogden Stiers,
mm-hmm.
who is a great actor who played Major Winchester in MASH. He also has a great new role in the new hit from Disney, Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
He plays the mantle clock. And so, anyhow, then I have my son, Donovan Freberg, who's the kid in the Encyclopedia Britannica commercials. And he kicks the applause. Finally, I got some applause from the audience, and he kicks it out of the walls accidentally. So the applause CD died. And so I said, that's all right, son. He just blew the illusion for millions of people, that's all. He says, another guilt trip laid on me. Huh? Anyhow, and my daughter, Donna Ebsen, is in this show. The great June Foray.
Oh,
the
sure.
voice of Rocky the Squirrel.
Absolutely.
And all the Freberg projects practically on record. St. George and the Dragon, that she said.
Wonderful.
He boined me already. Yeah. And Naomi Lewis, a hilarious woman and friend of mine for many years. And that's about it. Oh, M.G. Kelly is on. Machine Gun Kelly.
Sure.
Know him?
Sure. He was here one night.
Was he really?
Radio personality.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh,
yeah,
terrific.
He's on KCBS
guy.
Here.
Yeah.
But in Los Angeles. But... he does this dead-on impression of Rod Serling, see? So Ray Bradbury is the last guy I want to mention. He was in the show. And I do a thing called the Freeburg Zone. And every few seconds, the voice of Rod Serling comes breaking in with the Twilight Zone music, annoying the heck out of Bradbury. And he says, who is that guy? I said, well, do you find him familiar? He says, no, I find him annoying. Why is he even breaking in like that? So he finally shoots, not Serling, but he shoots the Twilight Zone music. And says, I've wanted to do that for years. You know, as a matter of fact, there was an animosity between Bradbury and Serling.
Is that right?
Real life, yeah.
Why?
Well, because for openers, Rod Serling lifted the entire plot of Fahrenheit 451.
That would cause some that appealing. Would,
yes,
yeah.
And so Ray had his...
Hi, good evening. I'm Debbie Reynolds. Happy Labor Day. Here's the latest from the WICC Weather Center.
As you're reading John Le Carré, the spy who came in from the cold, or whoever... the Smiley series, you know. Mm-hmm. You can, this whole thing is unfolding in your head. It is not limited by a 27-inch screen. And so that is why it is my favorite medium, but also because as a child growing up, like Bradbury, I lay there on the floor in South Pasadena with my ear shoved up against the grill cloth of this big Philco
amid all
radio.
The concerns.
And it was a new world opened up to me, and my heroes were Fred Allen and Norman Corwin and Jack Benny.
As you say, as I was going to say, you jammed your ear up against the Philco and listened to the world.
That's it. A world I never knew existed came into my head. And I thought, boy, if I ever have a chance to do that, I'll do it. Norman Corwin is the guy that taught me, through the radio. I didn't know him then. I know him now. That it's possible I could do it all. I could write words, music, poetry, a comic sketch, whatever I wanted to do, I could do. And later in life, I was very fortunate to finally meet him through Bradbury. So Corman is a terrific guy.
He was here one night. He's a terrific
man. Was he really?
Man. Yeah, he was here with our friend from Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters. Marty Halpern was in one night.
Oh, Marty, no, Marty, yeah.
And he brought Corwin in. We played some cuts. I mean, the guy's absolutely a genius. Genius.
Yeah, he is. And he did that every week then. He wrote a whole show single-handedly.
I know.
And it was on the CBS radio network. And so, anyhow, Norman was fantastic.
All right, I'm going to tell you the names of things we have. I have Democratic Song. I have Japanese Sony Boy. I have Stephen Foster. And then I have the one which you just selected. So now you can pick you can be the... You're the director of this.
Okay. Okay, well, let's start off with the Smithsonian thing because it kind of ties in a couple different ways. One is that the Smithsonian was one of the kind of sponsors of this whole thing. There's a lot of Freeburg fans came out of the woodwork at the Smithsonian. When I was there last week, they honored me by asking me to give them...
Yeah, you put something in there, didn't you?
I put a number of things in there, yeah. There was two curators fighting over me. One guy was the advertising curator. I said, I'll take that reel of film, please. And the other guy said, just a moment here. If you don't mind, there's a lot of other stuff besides commercials he's given us here. Bites out of television shows, mm-hmm. And there also was some Warner Brothers cartoons, in which I was the voice of Pete Puma in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. I gave him one of those. And I gave them also bound scripts of Stan Freeburg Presents the United States of America. It was fittingly given to the History Museum. And a lot of the scripts that weren't the final version, where I had different lyrics, mm-hmm. and everybody mm-hmm. wants to be an art director, and they love stuff like that. Oh, work in progress. You know, they love to see that.
Yeah.
So here in this show, since the Smithsonian was one of the underwriters of this thing, I thought it might be interesting to have a man with a giraffe come into the Air and Space Museum. And I want you to pay particular attention to the sound effects, which were created by me live in the studio. And also the great engineering was done by Ed Green, just fantastic audio engineer. So why don't we just play that cut and get the idea.
It's especially nice having the Smithsonian Institution aboard as one of the sponsors of this radio project, because the Smithsonian is one of my favorite places in all the world. As a matter of fact, through the magic of radio, I'm standing here now in the Air and Space Museum, where all the great... pardon me, sir.
Yeah?
I'm sorry, but...
You, Mr. Freeburg?
Yes, but you cannot bring that giraffe through here.
Oh, I'm a big fan, Mr. Freeburg.
That's nice. But you cannot bring that giraffe.
Really?
No live animals in the Smithsonian.
Oh, it's not the zoo.
This is not the zoo. That's way down the street. This is the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, and you especially cannot bring a giraffe through here.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
No. For one thing, your animal's too tall. Too tall, yeah. See, because we have many valuable, fragile items hanging in here. Oh. Lindbergh's plane, for example.
Oh, okay. Well, uh-huh. I'll just walk him on through. Come on, Willie.
No, watch it, sir. Take him back out the way you came. Sir.
Here we go, Willie.
Watch out for the plane. What? Watch your giraffe. Oh, boy. Walking right into Lindbergh. Plane. I was afraid of that. We return you now to our main studios.
I was afraid of that.
I was afraid of that, yeah.
We are with...
I kind of got a strained laugh out of some people in the Smithsonian. I'm sorry about the Lindbergh's plane there, you know.
I was afraid of that.
I wonder if they ran out into the Air and Space Museum just to check and make sure,
it's still there. We are back. I have to pause here, Stanley. We're with Stan Freeburg. We'll be right back with Stan. More of the show right after a station break. Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Snyder. This hour is an encore presentation, a rerun of the radio show. You won't be able to call on the phone tonight, but we sure hope you're enjoying it. Okay, we're back with Stan Freeburg. Incidentally, I mentioned this to Stan in the break. The last time he was here, we played the the bubble machine, remember?
Lawrence Welk, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah, well, that's another great visual picture. That's what radio is supposed to do, is create visual tapestries in people's minds.
All right, what's the next picture you have?
Here's the thing. A lot of people wondered, whatever happened to the rest of the volumes of the United States of America? Well, here is a sneak preview of the stuff that was never recorded until now. This is what David Merrick theoretically was going to produce on Broadway. This is Stephen Foster, the great 19th century songwriter with writer's block. And Harry Shearer plays the publisher, and Stephen Foster can't think of a thing to write, and all these people come in and lay on him all these song titles that he was eventually will write. It goes right over his head. Why don't you just play it?
All right.
Here's a scene that should upset folk musicologists. One of America's most beloved songwriters back in the 1800s was Stephen Foster, composer of such evergreens as Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, Oh Susanna, The Sun Shines Bright in My Old Kentucky Home, Camptown Races, Masses in the Cold, Cold Ground, Old Dog Tray, Beautiful Dreamer, and many more. But did it all come easy for him there at the piano? Does it ever come easy for any songwriter? How do we know he didn't have writer's block?
Your publisher's here, Mr. Foster.
Fine. Well, how's America's most beloved songwriter, the one and only Stephen Foster, today?
Terrible, Sam. I've run dry. Haven't got a song title in my head.
Don't depress your publisher like that, Steve, baby.
I tell you, I'm in trouble, Sam. I can't think of a song to save me.
Don't worry. You'll come up with something soon.
I know, but I haven't had a hit song in over 2 years. I can't think of a single line.
Well, you gotta keep your ear to the ground. Hey, there's inspiration all around you.
Really? Well, I don't know.
Here's the mail, Mr. Foster. There's a fan letter from way down upon the Swanee River.
Uh-huh. Let's put it on that old dog tray there.
That what?
Some nut was in here selling trays with pictures of Cocker Spaniels on them. You ready for that? I bought one to help him out. Yeah, we got all the kooks in here. Get that, will you, Sam?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Well, some guy's out here with a banjo strapped to his knee.
Mr. Foster?
Yes?
I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee.
So?
It cut off the circulation.
See what I mean? That's the kind of interruptions I get around here.
Where are you going now?
I'm going to Louisiana, my true love, for to see.
Out! Out!
I tell you, Sam, it's depressing. Gone are the days when my heart was young and gay.
Look, why don't you get away from New York for a while? Come down to my place in Kentucky for a couple days.
How's the weather down there? Pretty good?
Sure, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home.
Yeah?
Sure, we'll throw a little party, invite Laura Lee, Nellie Bly.
Hey, Nellie, I remember her.
You remember Jeannie?
Kid with the light brown hair.
Uh-huh.
Funny thing, I dreamt her about her the other night.
Ah, you're a beautiful dreamer, Steve. She's a knockout.
Yes?
Mr. Foster, sir?
Yes, what is it, Friendly?
Where shall I file these Bach oratorios?
Stick them down in the basement.
Oh, it's awfully damp down there, sir. You sure you want to put these masses in the cold, cold ground?
So, put them in the attic. Just don't bother me. Now, that'll give you an idea what it's...
Here's a new vocal group wants to audition for you, Mr. Foster.
Well, what do you call yourselves?
Camp Town Ladies.
Sing this song.
Doo-da, doo-da.
Forget it.
I ask you, Sam, how can a man write hit songs in this nut house?
Ah, come on, let's go downstairs. I'll buy you a good cigar.
Wait a minute. What did you say?
I said, come on downstairs, I'll buy you a good cigar.
Come on downstairs, I'll buy you a good cigar, dear. At last, I'm writing again.
Man, is that good. Oh, Jesus, that good. That is really, really good.
Yeah, I wrote that 25 years ago, you know.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. It was part of this show that I was going to do with David Merrick. And I always wanted to see that done on the stage, people coming in, blam, blam, in and out of the door.
Yeah, right.
To serve out later, you know. And so I finally got to do it on radio, and you can see the whole thing happening in your head. So that's good. Harry Shearer did a wonderful job
for driving me.
And David Ogden Stiers was the guy that wanted to put the masses in the cold, cold.
Sure you want to put those masses in the cold, cold. All right, we're with Stan Freberg in Los Angeles.
Yes.
We'll continue with Stan right after a station break. Okay, we're back with Stan Freberg, the star of the new Stan Freberg Show. We've heard a couple of tracks from the show. If that's any indication, I'll tell you, the Stephen Foster thing is sensational.
Thank you.
I mean, it's brilliant.
Well,
brilliant.
I hope to get this whole thing out on a CD and so that people will be able to play this stuff again and again. And
But as you say, we do that with Stan Freberg because it comes around. You know what I'm saying? Like at Christmas, I'm going to play Green Christmas here only because it ought to be played to kind of put a perspective. By the way, we have a good spot that runs here, and I don't know who the client is. But it's two women talking about something, and the one woman who's very fidgety about the situation, the pride, she says, oh, my God, she said, when is the 4th of July this year? And the woman says, it's early. She says, oh, thank God. Isn't that a great line?
Yeah.
When is the 4th of July? It's early. Oh, thank God.
Yeah. I did a Christmas commercial for Chun King Chow Mein one time, and a man said, tired of the old same old Christmas dinner, why not make it a Chun King Chow Mein Christmas dinner? I said, wait a minute, are you nuts? What are you doing here? We're going to have turkey. Christmas turkey and all the trimmings. The guy says, well, this is a very nice chow mein. I said, well, come and talk to me about that after the first of the year. I don't want to hear about that now, you know? And Matt said, well, all right. Just say Merry Christmas and sign off. He said, Merry Christmas from Chun King. I said, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And how did the sponsor like the spot that you did? Was Chun King happy?
He was a very hip guy. He's still around. Gino Paolucci.
Oh, sure.
A strange name for a man to own a Chinese food company.
Yeah.
But he liked it, and he thought it was outrageous. He likes being outrageous, you know? A while ago, you asked me how this new radio show came about, and you want me to answer that?
No.
No?
No.
There's a Tom Snyder I know, my God. I'm glad you haven't mellowed.
Remember last year when they had the big stink in Beverly Hills, and they have it again this year, as to whether or not the Jewish people can put the menorah up on...
Yes, I know that. I remember that, yeah.
You know what my feeling on that is?
What?
If it makes you so nuts, take Wilshire. You know, just don't drive past it. You know, do you sometimes wonder why we have all these squabbles over all this stuff?
Yes. Trivia. They argue over the most trivial things. And we have a few more important things to worry about than that. Yeah, but people make themselves nuts. They have heart attacks. They work themselves to get the blood pressure
into
up.
Into a frenzy.
Yes.
You know, if you want to put up the nativity scene, put it up. You want to put it up. Just, if it makes you nuts, take Second Avenue. Just don't drive past it. Then they say, well, it's public property. I mean, all over Wilshire Boulevard, they got Santa Claus and the sleigh and everything else on public property, and no, but nobody says nothing. I mean, we're too touchy, I think.
Yes, too touchy. Well, the other thing is we tend to take ourselves too seriously. Yeah, that's the thing. I always, you know, when I speak to big companies like IBM, I tell them, listen, let's not take ourselves so seriously.
Yeah, it's only a computer.
Not, right, that's my line to them. We're not selling pieces of the Holy Grail here. It's just a computer, you know. All the blood drains out of the executive
spaces.
Oh,
man, yeah. All right, let's go to George in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Hello.
Hi, Stan.
Hi.
Do you ever see the day when radio will return on a large scale as an entertainment medium? Right now, it's nothing but time tune and temperature.
Well, I resemble that remark.
Well, we do have Tom Snyder here. Yeah.
Look at the facts. It takes $1 million to churn out a half-hour television comedy anymore. And if you look at it, if you really examine it, it's 90% verbal. There's no need for the visual stuff.
Well, the thing is that advertisers are not totally convinced that there's a huge audience out there, which I know and Tom knows that there is.
Yes, there is.
And people, I've said for years, are tired of just checking in their brains and just staring, you know. I mean, and so it would be nice if indeed we were able to create the kind of creative radio that I have done in this one-hour show. And why couldn't that be on every night?
Well, let me make
drama.
A prediction. You will be back, and you will be back on a network like CBS or ABC because you're good. And when you do, I hope you have a studio audience because I want to come and see you sometime.
Okay, well, my plan is if this radio show becomes a series, which is the plan of National Public Radio and the BBC, or this is the first co-production between those two entities, and the plan is to do this as a series. If they can just get it funded, and they're working on that in Washington and London.
That's great. I think you've started a fire. I think it'll catch on.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Thank you, George.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. Rich, Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, Rich.
I feel really honored to be talking with Mr. Freeburg tonight.
Me too.
Okay.
Stan, a while back, I picked up the reissued version of the old Stan Freeburg radio show's collection.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if these old tapes of any more of the old radio show still exist, and if it'd be possible to get some of those back on the air or reissued.
Well, possibly. All those are down in the basement of my home in Beverly Hills in the archives down there. In the Freeburg archives.
In the cold, cold ground.
In the cold, cold ground. And so we'll see. Did you order that through the wireless catalog in Minnesota Public Broadcasting?
No, actually, I found it in a bookstore.
Okay. Yeah, they are in bookstores now. But they have this catalog, the wireless catalog, and you can order my CDs and also the best of the stand.
Saturday he shaves, but nobody sees him.
Best of the stand.
Now I want you to answer the question I asked an hour ago as to how this whole thing got started. Remember, a few minutes ago, I said, I don't want to hear about that. Now I want to hear about it.
Okay. A story on me appeared about 2 years ago in the Sunday style section of the Washington Post, in which the writer, Washington Post writer Michael Kiernan, asked me, why don't you do any more radio shows like the one you did when you replaced Jack Benny? And I answered him, because nobody's asked me. So a man at the Smithsonian named Roger Kennedy, who was the director of the American History Museum, said to a woman, Mary Beth Kirshner, who worked for him at that time, why don't we ask Freeburg to do a radio show for the Smithsonian?
Yeah.
So she called me, asked me, I said, absolutely, you're on, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. Now, it took her 2 years to get it funded with the help of the BBC, who came in, and they're the ones that finally made it possible. In the meantime, she moved to become the National Programming Director of WETA, W-E-T-A, the flagship station of National Public Radio in Washington, D.C.,
right,
where she is now. So, but the Smithsonian also was one of the sponsors, so that's how it got on.
You know, the other night, the woman was in here who's the general manager of KCRW here in Los Angeles. I forget her.
Ruth.
Yeah, Ruth. What a terrific individual. What a great broadcast.
Yeah, very dynamic personality.
Yeah.
And, of course, in Los Angeles, KCRW is running it, along with another station in Pasadena.
Let me ask you another question here, and if you don't want to give the answer, you don't have to.
Okay.
Audiences read in papers about how much it costs to make a television show, like $900,000 for an episode of a half hour.
What? I'm not saying.
Okay. All right. But, I mean, it's not $1 million.
No, it's not $1 million, no. But it's not $29.50
either. Of course
either.
It's not.
It costs a lot because we were very meticulous. We stayed in the studio for
a while.
Yeah, is it the cost was not in the actors. Mainly, it was in the staying in the studio to edit it with Ed Green. So Ed Green is a terrific audio man. He's a guy that loved radio like I did. And He is part of a company called Green Crow, and they always shoot the Academy Awards, all the Emmy Awards, and the Kennedy Honors from Washington. And he did Barbara Streisand's last album. He's a marvelous, marvelous audio engineer. He was the guy that did
it. By the way, did you see Streisand with Mike Wallace on Sunday?
Yeah, I did.
Wonderful piece, I thought.
Yeah, it was. It was, except that I thought that he was really... was kind of cruel to her.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll tell you
that's cheating. You're not supposed to really show a shot of Barbara Streisand fixing her mouth, her lipstick, and blotting her lips. You know, that's like behind the scenes. That's not nice.
Yeah, no.
How would Mike Wallace like somebody to shoot a picture of him just zipping up after he got back from the urinal or something? You know, that was an invasion of Barbara's privacy,
yeah.
I thought.
Get Mike Wallace on the phone. Get him on the phone.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No, I thought the man was...
And I'll tell you what else I didn't like was...
Because he made her cry a couple times.
Yeah,
you know,
he
that's
did.
Not nice.
Yeah, he did.
Who wants there to be a cold day when she lets him interview her again?
And incidentally, what happens when Wallace does something like that is he ruins it for the rest of us. Because now if I call her, she can say, oh,
are you kidding?
Yeah.
No, that's right.
Yeah, forget it. I'm going to go on. I got burned the last time.
But you know what? She survived, Mike Wallace, because of the terrific, marvelous talent she is.
Man.
And those clips they ran with Judy Garland and all the wonderful things they did. She's a total, total. And this engineer, one of the great experiences of his life was doing this album with her. And she's very, very meticulous perfectionist. And so, anyhow, my wife, who's the producer of the new Stan Freberg show, said, just what I need, two perfectionists, Freberg and Ed Green. But anyhow, so it took quite a few weeks to get
what I didn't like that Wallace did was at the end, when the whole piece ran, he looked at the camera and said kind of condescendingly, you know, I like that girl.
Yeah,
like,
man, no
Mike.
Kidding.
Yeah, Mike,
wasn't
who cares?
That a nice thing? Because this girl really doesn't have too much talent.
Yeah.
So we
need
to have Mike Wallace on her side. Yeah, that was such a stupid remark. Yeah.
I wish she'd make one more album, though.
Oh, she will. She will.
Yeah. Not for us, but.
Yeah. No, that's right.
All right, so the Democratic marching song is.
Okay, that's it. I felt that the there's a long scene in the show, not long, but about a minute and a half leading in. We'll skip that. In which I finally is pointed out that the Democrat time. I said in the show, I think I saw the chairman of the Democratic National Committee on a milk carton. Anyhow, these people are really in trouble. You know, they it's been so long since they've been in the White House, they think it's a place where you've ordered little bitty cheap hamburgers. And somebody says, no, that's White Castle. The guy says, oh, yeah, that's right. Anyhow, so this is a marching song I wrote for the Democrats. Here it is.
What does it take to get a halfway decent Democratic candidate? Just when we're ready to shout, another guy drops out. We want a guy we can take to the bank, but every 4 years we keep coming up blank. Picture Dukakis coming out of that tank. How about a halfway decent candidate? What does it take to get a halfway decent Democratic candidate? Young or old, short or tall, just grab some guy in the mall. We don't look back because we know where we've been. Every 4 years we get slugged on the chin. We'd run Bart Simpson if we thought he could win. Give us a halfway decent candidate. What does it take to get a halfway decent Democratic candidate? Though anyone will suffice, somebody breathing would be nice. Mario says maybe, but he never says when. You think it's time to run McGovern again? Maybe Jerry Brown with a little less sin. How about a halfway decent Democratic candidate?
And an easily understood arrangement. I saw a bumper
sticker. The great Billy May.
Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah. I saw a bumper sticker the other day, Stan. It said, he's tanned, he's rested, he's ready. Nixon in 92. Here is Sam in Altamont Springs, Florida. Hello.
Dr. Snyder, I presume.
Good evening, Dr. Sam. How are you?
Doing fine.
Thank you.
I wanted to call in tonight when I heard Stan Freberg was on, and I'm calling from the University of Humor, and I think you may recall receiving your honorary Ph.D. and B.S. degree.
You're addressing Mr. Snyder or myself?
I'm addressing Dr. Snyder.
Yes, I
Dr.
do.
Dr. Snyder.
I have said BS certificate proudly displayed on my office wall, sir.
Well, I'm very happy to say that. Well, one of the things that we didn't include was that it takes one to know one, Dr. Snyder.
Yeah, I know.
So you're able to honor future degree holders, and I would like to recommend Mr. Freeberg.
Excellent.
Oh, good. That's nice. Uh-huh.
So,
what is this, the BS award? Is that it?
Well, and it's also the College of Humor.
Okay. College of Humor.
Yeah,
oh,
you get a doctorate in humor and an honorary BS award.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, well, I'll look forward to that, I think.
And, well, I hope you will enjoy it, and you'll be able to nominate someone else. And if possible, if I could get off air and find out what your address is, I'd love to send you.
I will take you off the air, and you will get the address from Lisa, my producer, and you can send the inscribed diploma to future doctor.
Oh, that's sure. Fantastic.
All right.
Thank you very much,
thank you very
doctor.
Much. Yes. Remember Jackie Lerner? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Joan Edison, New Jersey. Hello.
Oh, hello. I just can't believe I'm on with the great Stan Freeberg.
The great Stan Freeberg.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I've just been a fan of yours forever.
Really?
Well,
that's always lovely to hear. That's great.
You wrote a book, and you said, I happen to be a person that's blind. And you wrote a book a few years ago, and you said that you were going to tape it, and you were going to put all your commercials in.
That's correct. And
when am I going to be able to buy it?
Okay, the reason you can't buy it up till now is that the people at Random House said, well, there's a recession, and we're cutting back. And, we just have a few things that we want to do here. We have Salman Rushdie is on the agenda here to read his book. But,
Freeberg,
that's an awful lot of
Freeberg, no.
And it's too much production. You actually want to put sound effects in there?
No.
So, I think maybe I'll approach a guy, Michael Wiener, that is the head of Dove Records out here and see if we can't get it on Dove
that's
Records.
That's a good idea,
tapes.
By
yeah,
the way.
It
yeah,
is, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's anything, because I want to be able to read it.
Oh, okay. Oh, that.
Your Mars commercials from the 60s.
Oh, you have those? Or you remember them?
I remember them.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
I think I have them on some open reel tape that I can't play anymore.
Oh, well, could you get somebody to transfer it for you onto an audio cassette? Because you could probably handle audio cassette deck okay, right?
Yeah, I think they do that at some photo mats, you might
say. You know, I'd like to just say that I have a lot of fans across America who are not sighted, you know, and it slowly was revealed to me. There's a guy who is two brothers actually who are blind in the Pasadena station here. One of the stations is running it tomorrow night, KPCC in Pasadena FM, and both these guys are blind. And other people, there's a guy in Philadelphia also is a blind disc jockey there. And I just think that because I've utilized the theater of the mind so much, that you guys maybe even appreciate it more than sighted people. I'm grateful for that.
We are with the great Stan Freeberg. We'll continue from Los Angeles after these messages. Okay, you know, Stan, whatever you said, I didn't hear because I had the earphones turned up so loud in my ears.
Oh, I see.
You said I'll do something and then we're on.
I said I would be glad to describe a couple of the sound effects that people can hear when they hear the new Stan Freeberg show.
I got 30 seconds. Describe one sound.
Okay, one sound? Okay, well, we have the sound of the Communist Party finally winding down. That's an interesting sound. But a more interesting one, perhaps, is the sound of Madonna jogging smack into the studio wall in her cone bra. And then the sound of prying her off the wall is an interesting sound.
You're an interesting man. I'm really glad you came over tonight. It's always a joy. I'll see you in the hallways.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
You're always welcome. Here.
Thank you. I always love being on your show because you are one of the people that truly love radio.
I sure do. And I love Stan Freeberg, too.
Thanks, Tom.
Stan Freeberg, listen to him, and thanks for listening to us, everybody.